Hello, my name is Kennedy Sam, and you're listening to Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU. On this program, we sit down with creatives and community leaders making an impact in our artistic and cultural sector. Today, we are chatting with Todd Burka, director of the Waco Convention Center and Visitors Bureau. Later on, we'll hear the segment David and Art with David Smith. But first, you'll hear from Fiona Bond, our executive director at Creative Waco. Hey, Fiona, how are you doing today?
Hi, I'm great, Kennedy.
So the last 3 months have been a bit of a whirlwind for our country and our community, from dealing with the impact of a global pandemic to a national and international call to acknowledge and combat injustices experienced within America. Fiona, what is Creative Waco's role in all of this?
Well, we're Waco and McLennan County's local arts agency, of course, and that means I think we have a role to play in distributing resources, forming policy, and just as we believe the arts have a key role to play in helping our community deal with and recover from a global pandemic, we also care about the role that the arts have to play in addressing issues of racial justice. And I would be the first to say, I don't think we have this figured out yet, but as an organization, we do know our core values. One of those is that we're a learning organization, so our starting point is that we're committed to learning from and with our community. We also have a core value of equity of opportunity, of resource distribution, of representation on our staff and board. And in the artists and populations that we serve, that we employ or engage through our projects and programs, and all of that means we take issues like racial justice very seriously. And we try to develop programs and structures that genuinely, authentically invite everybody to the table. And I hope it goes without saying that we wholeheartedly believe that Black lives matter. I don't think that statement unevenly recognizes the value of life or that it's a political position, but I do think it's an acknowledgement of a real problem. It's a confession that we recognize that however unintentionally we may be part of that problem, and it's a commitment to doing something about the problem. And so I think the arts have a really vital role to play because they invite us to think and ask questions about things that we think we already know. James Baldwin said something that I think rings very true to me. The purpose of art is to lay bare the questions that have been concealed by the answers. And so to my mind, we really have a role to play in creating safe spaces for people to ask good questions and try and figure out, you know, where their path lies in all of this. And I'd say, too, that, you know, it's really important as we kind of try and figure out the role of the arts, it's also important to acknowledge that whereas true art has a really important role to play right through history, we've seen propaganda play almost the opposite role, where, you know, it closes off questions and presents a certain point of view ready package. So we want to make sure that when we're talking about the role of the arts, we're talking about art and not propaganda. But the arts at their best ask us to look deeper, see the world differently, create a safe, inviting context for doing that. You know, visual art is about opening our eyes, and music is about opening our ears, literature about opening our imaginations, dance about exploring our physicality, film and theatre open our experiential world, and all art forms give us narrative alternatives. They let us look at role-playing different trajectories, they open us to new ways of understanding, and they allow us to experience someone else's reality, which is incredibly important if we are to move beyond this kind of us and them way of viewing the issues in front of us. I also think that justice issues are inherently economic issues, and that if we have an economic and social architecture that makes it more difficult for some talented people to succeed and thrive, including artists, or denies them opportunities, we're limiting the prosperity of not just them as individuals or groups, but of our whole community. And in the case of the arts and culture, Waco's cultural identity is built on a founding story it's way more diverse than most US cities. And, you know, that's part, we don't want to leave that behind. We don't want to do an injustice to our own story. Jacob de Cordova, who is the founder of Waco, was from Jamaica, raised in Britain. He's of Hispanic and Jewish descent, and he sowed the seeds for a city whose culture has never been monolithic. It's part of our appeal, and just as I I hope Todd talks about when you talk to him. If we don't actively promote that as one of our most valuable assets, we're doing our city and our community, our own story, a disservice. And that closes the door to the kind of vibrancy and opportunity that makes our community flourish. I really hope and believe that, as Martin Luther King Jr. said, the moral arc of the universe bends towards justice. And I hope that here in Waco we'll rise to the challenge of working towards that reality, even after it's at the forefront of media attention. This is something we need to go on doing. So I believe and hope that our arts community has an essential role to play and will help us on that journey. So, you know, that's where our conversation within the arts and specifically in Creative Waco is going. I believe and hope that our arts community has an essential role to play in helping us on that journey. And it's going to be a journey.
That it is. Thank you, Fiona. This conversation will be posted on kwbu.org. You can also visit creativewaco.org/blog for content related to this episode. Stay tuned for our conversation with Todd Bertka of the CVB. But first, here is David Smith with David and Art.
A visionary and world-famous artist died at the end of May. Christo Yavachev was born in Bulgaria in 1935 and from his youth studied art. In 1956, he escaped from Bulgaria and made his way to Vienna, Geneva, and finally to Paris. He and his wife, who was his regular collaborator, moved to New York in 1964, and he became an American citizen in 1973. Christo began his career as a painter, but under the influence of revolutionary artists like Jasper Johns, he started experimenting with a style of sculpture that involved wrapping everyday items in fabric. His idea was that by obscuring something, an artist paradoxically draws more attention to whatever it is and lets us see familiar things in a fresh and more introspective way. The environmental installations into which he moved sought the same thing on a far larger scale. In the 1970s and 80s, his high-profile projects made him one of the most well-known artists working in the United States, even if many people angrily insisted that his work wasn't art at all. In 1972, he strung a 1,250-foot-long orange curtain across a valley in Colorado. He wrapped the oldest bridge in Paris in 1985 and the entire Reichstag building in Berlin 10 years later. In 2005, he installed 7,500 curtained gates along 23 miles of paths in Central Park. If you're not familiar with his work, Google his name and take a look at some of his projects. Don't try to read anything into them. Just see how visually captivating they are. None of them stayed in place longer than a couple of weeks. The New York Times called him an eccentric visionary who won over many of his skeptics with persistence, charm, and a childlike belief that eventually everyone would see things the way he did. Indeed, very few artists are forced to defend their projects before skeptical audiences more often than he was. A week before he died, he told CNN that over his career, 23 outdoor projects had been realized, while 47 others were rejected. For every 1,000 people who tried to stop his projects, 1,000 others tried to help. Christo's next big project was to wrap the Arc de Triomphe in Paris. It's a plan he had been imagining since 1962. He was going to encase the famous Parisian monument in 25,000 square meters of silver and blue fabric, bundled with 7,000 meters of red rope. Much to my delight, his office has confirmed that the project will go ahead and be carried out in September 2021. It will be his last. We will not see another like him. Christo was 84.
You can find this and past episodes on our website at kwbu.org. Look for David and Art in the Programs tab.
Welcome back. You're listening to Conversation with Creative Waco on KWBU, and I'm your host, Kennedy Sam. Please join us in welcoming Todd Bertka, Director of the Waco Convention Center and Visitors Bureau. Hey, Todd, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm great. So you have worked in the tourism, hospitality, and sales and marketing industry for quite some time. How did you get into that industry, and how did you get to Waco?
Well, both are sort of interesting questions and pathways, but I will tell you, when I got into the hospitality industry, there were only a handful of colleges around the country that even offered hospitality as a degree. Certainly the more famous ones, Cornell, Purdue University, even University of Wisconsin-Stout, had notable hospitality schools and hospitality programs. I did not attend any of those. I got a degree in business communications and a follow-up degree in professional writing, and really had envisioned a path in the advertising public relations world, and that's where my post-college career started. Through a couple of movements down to Atlanta and then up to Minneapolis, found myself back in Akron, Ohio, where I grew up, and got my college degrees, and I landed a job in an advertising agency and doing some account work and some sales, which was great. I loved sales and was, fairly good at it. And I ended up landing an account for the agency that required the involvement of what was then our local Akron Convention and Visitors Bureau, which I had no idea even existed. In doing that and in doing some research for this new account for the agency, was introduced to the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and a short time thereafter was recruited by them to come work in a sales capacity. And so the rest is really history, although it's allowed me to pursue a sales career, but yet in the world of hospitality and tourism that I had no idea existed, number one. And number two, it afforded me some amazing experiences and opportunities after 4 years in Akron. Sort of led down a path to some time in Indianapolis with their Convention and Visitor Bureau. And then Disney came calling. And so I worked for Disney and ran their Chicago regional office for a couple of years, which was spectacular experience.
I can imagine.
It was really great. even though I was only there 2 years, I learned about 5 years worth of industry knowledge in that 2 year span of time, which then led to an opportunity to run the Hawaii Convention and Visitor Bureau North American office out of Chicago, and was there for almost 8 years and representing Hawaii and the convention center there, along with, running the Midwest market for them. And so from there, Nashville for a couple of years, Greenville, South Carolina for five, all in CVB capacities. Mm-hmm. And then the leadership opportunity is really what started to elevate my career from that standpoint. After handling sales in a number of markets for a number of years, really in sales, what I mean is attracting events and convention events to the destinations that I represented. And we're going to come back to that because I think that's really important for university students and listeners that are interested in this career. Mm-hmm. Sales is not a bad thing. In fact, it's an essential thing. So it's really cool to have a conversation about that. But leadership roles took me to Greenville, and then 4 years of the senior vice president in Virginia Beach, which then allowed me the opportunity to be considered for the lead leadership role here in Waco. And interestingly, we had known of Waco through the emergence of the Fixer Upper show,
right.
sitting on on Saturday mornings watching and that kind of thing, and an awareness certainly, from my perspective, representing destinations, I immediately started to look at the appeal of the B-roll footage and, what does Waco look like and feel like beyond the fixer-upper part of the show. And so, interestingly enough, and the beauty of our industry is all connections. Mm-hmm. And we're a huge multi-billion, trillion-dollar industry But then it's all about connections, and we're all connected. And a colleague of mine reached out to me and said, I don't know if you know this, but Waco is looking for a new director for their Convention Center and Visitors Bureau, and we think you'd be a great candidate. And so I answered that call, and it was just it felt right. Everything fell into place, and it's been really great. It's been the career position, the career move of a lifetime for me, just because it's allowed myself and my family to come to a destination that has still such positive momentum behind it in our industry specifically, and then the community in general has such a positive disposition to it. And so we're just very thankful that the path has led us here, and I've enjoyed every minute of it since being here. I got here in December of 2018, so almost a year and a half already, which, man, that's flown by. So and I've gotten to meet great people like yourself.
Yeah,
so.
I remember, I think we started right around the same time. You started in December. I started in January with Creative Waco. Mm-hmm. And we took a trip around town.
Yes.
Kind of, Susan gave us a tour guide. So
that's
that was
right.
Kind of my reintroduction into Waco, too, when you were being introduced. So
right.
it was a really special experience. So a lot of people who have lived in Waco for a long time see this beautiful building along the river, huge building, and it recently got an update in the last couple years. But what is the role of the Convention Center and the Visitors Bureau in our community?
So the role is multifaceted. The physical building itself is obviously a gathering place and economic generator at the same time. And the role of convention centers are ones that and some of this changes throughout the evolution of the popularity of a destination. And so as a community is building its sort of notoriety as a legitimate destination, as a desirable destination, convention centers go through a bit of a evolution that normally you'd be in. The typical business might be weddings and birthday parties and kinses and small meetings and that kind of thing, local opportunities, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
All of that has a role. But then the evolution and the desire to host larger meetings, conventions that generate hotel room night economic impact, as well as visitors coming from around the state that have dollars to spend in our restaurants and our shops. So that building becomes the epicenter of an experiential part of a business kind of part, aside from the social that generates revenues both in the building and in the community. And those revenues go to fund everything from schools to programs and the taxes that are generated from hospitality tax are really widely spent, and that's a really important part of our community tax base. So aside from that, the role of the Convention and Visitor Bureau is more of the marketing entity of the destination itself, that overarching what is Waco and how is Waco perceived and marketed to visitors, both from the meeting and planning side of the equation to the leisure traveler. And our charge is really to reach all of those markets, you know, as effectively as possible to generate visitation to the destination, to take advantage of our attractions and the arts and culture that we have to offer, that consumable sort of experiential tourism is what we're really trying to perpetuate.
Yeah. So prior to, everything shutting down due to COVID-19, we had a pretty consistent track record. We had, 30,000 visitors a week or something crazy?
Mm-hmm.
And then we had, a whole bunch of hotel projects in the works and a lot of spring events that were happening. So with the success of Magnolia and just the growth and diversification of our city in the last couple of years, how has our tourism industry kind of changed as well?
Well, it's diversified first and foremost. It's become far more popular. Waco is now a legitimate, acceptable place to come visit and experience. We've got a number of attractions, whether they're museum type attractions, everything from the Mayborn to the Ranger Hall of Fame to our zoo. I would tell you that our zoo is one of the best in the country for a community of our size. So that wide range, diverse of attractions that we have, the arts and culture segment of our community, the availability to really consume amazing art and cultural events, musical events are really important. And so those all become attractive sort of arrows, if you will, to allow folks, if they when it's time to spend their travel dollar, they want to get the most out of that and a unique experience. And I think now Waco has elevated itself to the forefront of people's consciousness. And Magnolia has a great deal to do with it, but they're not the only thing to do with it. Certainly, they were the rocket booster that really exposed Waco to the traveling public. But now I think Waco really stands and can and should stand on its own for its diversity and experiential breadth. And the you mentioned the hotel development. Even post-COVID, our hotels we're growing and we're expanding. There are more hotels coming. We have three major hotel projects right in the middle of downtown that look to break ground sometime still yet in this calendar year. We'll have close to 1,000 new hotel rooms within a 24-month span of from today. And so that growth is encouraging. It's a little daunting
yeah.
because we're the ones that sort of, you know, we take it the responsibility of wanting to fill those rooms as best we can with diverse visitors and that kind of thing. So it's exciting. Yeah, pre-COVID, we were on a torrid pace. We hosted just in the month of February of this year, hard to believe, we hosted 53 events in our convention center in the month of February.
Wow, 53?
Yeah. And so we were on a pace the year before. We had hosted 388 events in the building. Mm-hmm. I would tell you that's maybe a little bit too many, but, you know, just for balance and that kind of thing. But and then we've got this, you know, 100-day void of everything.
Right.
And so I don't know if it's encouraging, but certainly we're not in this alone. It'd be one thing if it was some sort of identifiable just to us, but every destination in the country is feeling the exact same way. The good news for us, I think, or a silver lining a little bit on the post-COVID recovery is that even as of today, Waco ranks fifth in the state for occupancy. And so the good news here is that our lows were not as low as everyone else's, and our recovery seems to be on a little bit faster track than many. And so we're very excited about what that may, you know, what that means for us on the backside of the crisis. So.
Yeah. So Creative Waco's mission is to help develop the arts and culture and make Waco a hub for the arts and a destination for creativity. You guys are also working on your own Destination Waco project, like right before mm-hmm. everything was canceled
yeah.
to launch at South by Southwest. Can you give some information on what Destination Waco is and what you guys were hoping to accomplish?
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up because we had such grand plans for this continued emergence into the traveler's psyche and the economic development psyche. And South by Southwest has been such a great platform for those kinds of endeavors. We were looking to follow on the heels of Chip and Joanna's appearance at South by, and we were partnering with Baylor and the Chamber of Commerce and other entities to sort of a coming out party for Waco as a destination.
Mm-hmm.
And Destination Waco came out of some creative, you know, kind of thought meetings that we had, how we want to present Waco, what is Waco to the traveler or to even the local person? And we think that Destination Waco has some broad-ranging, diverse appeal to it because it can be your destination regardless of whether you're down the street and you've lived here, your fourth, fifth generation Wacoan. It's whatever, you know, what that destination is to you. And aside from the sort of the out-of-towner, yes, it's a destination to go to, But then there's that discovery part of what we think Waco has to offer, that depending on what that destination is, do you want a cultural experience? Do you want an attraction experience? Do you want a weekend just exploring and discovering Waco? Our physical assets, our geographical location, all of them sort of combine for this thought that, you know, Waco is a destination, and it's a multi-layered, multifaceted sort of place that has so much to offer. And so that destination is sort of that all-encompassing kind of thought there. So we're excited about that. It's still percolating on mm-hmm. the background, and we hope to bring it back to the forefront. We're going to do a little more research on some things, but we feel that it's got some real legs to it as we come out of this crisis and sort of represent to the traveling public.
Yeah, so as we enter this new season, another awesome thing that's happening with Waco is the Music Friendly City designation.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, I guess, like you're being recognized by the city as being a community that can support the arts and music. So can you give some more detail on the significance of this designation and what that will do for our music scene?
Yeah, I probably won't do it justice. There are a couple of folks in town that have really taken a grassroots approach to presenting this designation. So the state of Texas put together a program called Music Friendly Community Designation, and it really is an opportunity for communities to share the great value and depth of their music culture in their respective communities. And it does a couple of things. It's not just a forward-facing, we have all of these performances and opportunities to offer, but it's also an inward-facing designation that allows the local community to congregate together, to learn best practices, and to perpetuate and continue to grow the musical offerings within that community and share its diversity in many different forms. And so the state recognizes you. You go through this process of applying for recognition of this designation. And then the state recognizes you accordingly. And we're waiting with bated breath for Double Link on the quote unquote, you know, contract and you know, certification. And once we do that, then we're going to start promoting ourselves that way. And I think ultimately what we want to be able to do is share locally that we believe and know that music and your creativity process in all the various forms that it takes place. And that's the one thing that Waco, I think, separates, or at least has to offer for someone that's interested in a musical experience here. It can be so wide ranging, and we have such great talented artists and artisans here that you can discover all kinds of opportunities here, and that's what the appeal for Waco is, that it's so much diversity here that we're really excited about what this, we're on the ground level launching pad of this this phenomenon. So I think we're really excited about being able to promote that accordingly out into the you know, traveling public. Yeah. And locally. I think local citizens here, local Wacoans, could really stand to benefit from learning and discovering what we have to offer here in our own backyard. So, yeah, we're excited about what that has to offer for us.
Yeah, one thing I really love about Waco is just the overall community. Like, across sectors, everyone is so committed to seeing Waco as a community succeed. And so mm-hmm. even though they might work in parallel, they're all, you know, are here for the unity and the overall benefit of the community.
Well, I agree with you 100%, and I also can appreciate the level of folks that have a vested interest in the arts and culture, and especially along the music lines, young, old, baby boomers, Gen Xers, millennials. They're all sort of gotten on this sort of path together, and they're sharing their own perspectives, but with the one intention of moving this this sort of evolution of our music scene forward, which is really cool. So
yeah, well, thank you so much, Todd, for sitting down with us today.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
There are many ways to connect with the Waco Convention Center and Visitors Bureau. Follow them on Facebook at WacoCVB or on Instagram at WacoTXHOT. Visit their website, WacoHeartOfTexas.com, to browse their events calendar, attraction information, and more. You can also download the Waco app to your iPhone or Android. This conversation will be posted on kwbu.org. You can also visit creativewaco.org/blog for content related to this episode. Listen to the next episode on Friday, July 31st for more deep dives into local arts and culture. This has been Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU, and I'm your host, Kennedy Sam. Thanks for tuning in.